Welcome to the Plant Cunning Podcast,
where we explore our relationship to plants, other people, and the mysteries of nature.
Coming to you from the High Allegheny Plateau in central New York,
we are your hosts, A.C. Staubel
and Isaac Hill. We are super excited to have Wildman Steve Brill on the show today. Steve is a legendary forager and teacher about wild plants, and it's going to be an amazing experience for you. I think you're going to love the show. Before we get to the show, we just want to have a word from our sponsors, which is us.
Hi, it's AC.
And Isaac from the Plant Cunning Podcast.
We're super excited to announce our upcoming conference. The Plant Cunning Conference is happening the last weekend of July. It's going to be 3 days this year, July 26th, 27th, 28th.
It's going to be at our small farm in central New York in person. Space is limited. Ticket prices are also going up in June. So if you'd like to get your tickets, get them now at plantcunningconference.com. We have some amazing speakers, including Pam Montgomery, Sevensong, astrologer Michael Bryan, Rebecca Beyer, Lisa Fazio, and many others.
I'm really excited for some of the movement classes that we're offering. We incorporate a plant or fungi walk. We have Olga Tsokas coming back from Smugtown Mushrooms. So there's always a chance to get around and move your body, in addition to listening to some amazing classes from all of the great speakers we have. So check out the full list of speakers at plantcunningconference.com as well.
Okay, we'll see you there. Okay, so today on the Plant Cunning Podcast, we are honored to have a legendary forager, Wildman Steve Brill. So how are you today, Steve?
Very good. I just got home from swimming a mile, preceded by yoga, some light weights, a few calisthenics, and meditation. I try to stay healthy and fit. I'm 75, and my only health problem is an intractable case of CCD. Compulsive cooking disorder.
All right. I'm like CCD.
Trying to make something new with the wild foods.
I love that.
Yeah, I love all these pictures behind you of all these plants. That's
fantastic. Yeah, those are my illustrations.
Really beautiful.
Wow, you're such a great artist.
I know.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, so I got into this through interest in cooking. So one day in the 1970s, I was walking through the kitchen. It was a carton of oatmeal. And this is before the internet. They printed recipes on the boxes. And this is wisteria, my daughter's parakeet. She's in college, so he wants to take part in the podcast.
Oh, he's beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, and he talks too. I'll let him do the podcast.
All right, perfect.
There's an oatmeal cookie recipe on the side of the box, and on a whim, I made the recipe, and it was quite good. Then I graduated to the recipe on the raisin box. Eventually, I started going to the library and getting cookbooks and got more and more involved in cooking. After college, I had tried to get a career going in chess. My best game, I did beat a master once, but that was not really working out. It was like, you can't even get into the minor leagues. Maybe one day in your life, you could hold your own with them. So I was looking for other directions. I got more involved in cooking. And I also started learning about health and nutrition. In 1990, I became a vegan. Although if no one's looking, I won't hesitate to yank out and devour a cattail. So I got involved in cooking, and one day I was bicycling for exercise, which I do every few days, and passed the local park, and there were these ethnic Greek women dressed in black picking something in the park. And since I had just recently gone into food and cooking, I asked them what they were doing, but I couldn't understand a word. It was all Greek to me.
Naturally.
But I came home with a bag of grape leaves, which I stuffed with an original stuffing, and it was quite delicious. And then in the fall, the same park was festooned with fox grapes, which are one of the forerunners of Concord grapes. It was a hybrid between European grapes and fox grapes. And they have a thicker skin and they have seeds, but they are way, way more flavorful and quite tart, So you cook them with something not tart, like pear juice, add a thickener to make a jam or a sauce, and strain out the seeds. Use a food mill, it has a crank on top and holes on the bottom and a bowl. And you make the most incredible and extremely healthy wild grape recipes. And of course, you can use those for wine making as well, which I have done. And
I've done
then I
that too.
started, then I started getting what books, there was no foraging teachers, what books were available. And the books back in 1981 were absolutely horrible. There was not a
Yeah.
single book that even had garlic mustard in it, much less mugwort. And all of the fruits you cook with sugar, and all the greens you cook with bacon fat. And that was the extent of the culinary info. So I did my own experiments, and I'm still doing so. In 1982, I began leading foraging tours in parks throughout the greater New York area. More difficult than now, no internet. You have to actually have flyers printed out at a copy store and then stick them on lampposts and write news releases, have those copied, stuff envelopes and mail them to the various newspapers. But I had a big breakthrough on March 29th, 1986. I was leading a foraging tour, and you've heard the story before, Wisteria, in Central Park, looking for plants, and there were already two plants on my tour. Undercover agents, a man and a woman. They said they were married. They never held hands or kissed, so I figured they'd been married for many years. And they had a film camera and they took pictures, and I'd hold up the specimens, only I was the specimen.
Oh
At the
no.
end of the tour, this is in March, the dandelions are at their best, and I showed people that you could eat a dandelion. I ate a leaf. The undercover, the male ranger, ducked behind a tree, took out a hidden walkie-talkie. There he is on 81st Street. Go get him. Every park ranger in New York City popped out from behind the bushes. They surrounded me in case I was going to climb up a tree. They put me in handcuffs so I couldn't bop them on the head with a dandelion point. They searched me. I don't know if they're looking for weeds or weed, but they hauled me off to the police station in handcuffs where they tortured me. They blew cigarette smoke in my face for 3 hours. They took fingerprints, they took mugshots. They charged and gave me a desk appearance ticket. I was charged with criminal mischief for removing vegetation from the park and could face up to a year in jail. The charge was criminal mischief.
Oh my
And
gosh.
then they made a very bad mistake, their second mistake. They let me go. The first mistake is they should not have done this in Central Park. Central Park just happens to be the most famous park in the world. So I went home and picked up the phone and called every newspaper, every TV station, every fire service, and told them what happened. The next morning, I went to the newsstand to see if I'd gotten any press. Five cops stopped me. What do you want? I said, I haven't picked a single plant. I haven't even had breakfast yet. One of the cops says, we don't care. We want your autograph.
Whoa.
Front pages
Nice.
of newspapers around the country. I even we even went international. The
Wow.
BBC interviewed me. But the coal miners' strike is in its fifth week, and in New York City, they arrested the wild men of Central Park for eating a dandelion. So I was on BBC Radio News.
Oh, cool.
I got home. I got called by CBS Evening News, come into Central Park right away. Before the internet, people watched the news on TV every evening. I was on 5 Minutes with Dan Rather. Channel 2 and Channel 4 and Channel 7 TV were waiting online behind them to cover the story. I got on everything from Letterman to MTV, and I can't dance or sing to save my life. When they took me to court, I served Wild Man's five-borough salad on the steps of the Manhattan Criminal Courthouse to reporters and passersby. the press ate that up too. And the Parks Department was forced to turn over a new leaf. They negotiated with me, dropped the charges, and hired me to lead the same tours I was leading when I was arrested. And I worked as a parks naturalist from 86 to 90 until the administration changed, leading foraging tours. And I hope something like this happens again. I'm keeping my fingers crossed. I hope there was such a thing. So I lead foraging tours throughout the greater New York area, New York City, Long Island, Connecticut, Dutchess County. I work with the public. I work with schools, nature centers, garden clubs, museums. I have a daughter. Her name is Violet. And she started coming on my tours in a stroller when she was a baby. Didn't work out very well. By the time she was 9, she knew all the plants and all the mushrooms. She was co-leading the tours, bossing me around,
Oh my
finding
gosh.
plants and mushrooms faster than me and stealing all my jokes. And now she's in college. She's studying environmental sciences and sustainability at Cornell. And her big interest, for some reason, is birds.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, Cornell has one of the best ornithology labs in the world, although some of the ornithologists can be a little flighty.
Yep.
Yeah, they had an open house last year, so of course all the birds flew off. On the other hand, she's also taking statistics now, and her statistics teacher is above average.
I'd hope so for Cornell.
Yeah, so I miss her, and Wisteria misses her too. But once in a while, she's in Arizona with the scientists there, and they are doing bird studies during the spring break, measuring and blood samples and putting tags around the feet and all kinds of stuff that ornithologists do.
It's
So
important work.
yeah, I'm very proud of her.
Yes, it's wonderful.
Yeah, and what you've been doing for these decades has also been important work, I think, like getting people exposed to wild plants and helping them become more familiar with what plants there are. How many people do you think you've led tours to over the years?
I
Do
don't
you, have
know,
you
many, many
counted?
thousands. I had tours last year after a video went viral where I had to close out the tours of 100 people. And the whole time in the tour, I could hear my daughter's voice in the back of my head, "Daddy, talk louder. Daddy, talk louder. Daddy, talk louder."
Yeah, it's so hard to hear in the back sometimes.
Yeah, I don't.
So,
Yeah, even with like a 20-person plant walk, it can be hard to hear in the back.
I do talk. I do talk very loudly.
That's good.
How have you seen the public reception towards wild foraging change over the years? Because, I mean, I know even in my lifetime, there's been a big difference between when I was in my early 20s and now.
Oh, yeah. Well, I had one tour in 1982 where only one person attended, and last year I had 100. And some of the people have studied with other foragers. There's much more information available now that we have the internet. I have an app, Foraging with a Wild Man, that people enjoy. And I've written 5 books, and I have a website, wildmansstevebrill.com, and I'm happy to answer people's emails. If
Yeah, your website.
I don't know the answer to your question, I'll make one up.
So you probably have seen just a lot more interest over the years.
Yes,
And,
yes.
you went from being arrested to being hired by the Parks Department. And yeah, now there are a lot more people doing wild foraging and writing books about wild foraging and things like that. But you are like, one of the first pioneers in this field. And it's so cool to hear about your stories, and I really appreciate on your website all of the free resources, with Encyclopedia of Plants with pictures and things like that.
I'm going
So
to be posting a lot of stuff on YouTube. One of the things I'm trying to complete now, as I think I had told you before, is a video foraging course, 281 plants, 41 hours, everything I know about all the plants. And not
Love
all
it.
major edibles, like some of them are. This plant looks like Asiatic day flower, but it's hairy and it's a grass and it won't poison you, but you can't eat it. So there's some lookalikes that are very
Oh,
brief,
good.
but everything I've learned about all the plants over all the decades I've been doing this is on there. So
Very cool. That's really exciting.
yeah, I'm busy with my tours, but as soon as I can get all the technical stuff done with. So I've gone over the course everything 5 times. So the stuff is correct, but getting it online, probably I'll have it on Udemy maybe by the summer, is another big task, especially difficult when I'm out doing all these tours. And I do spend a couple of hours of the yoga and exercise and meditation every day. I'm 75 and I need to do a lot of this kind of stuff to stay fit and healthy.
Yeah, that's
Yeah.
really important for sure.
But eating all that wild food probably helps too.
Definitely, definitely. The wild foods, as I'm sure you know, have more concentration of nutrients. The stuff you buy in the store has been bred to be bigger, so it weighs more and commands higher prices. Most of that weight is water content. And you can prove that by putting a commercial version of a plant in a juicer, and a lot of juice comes out, which is mostly water, and a wild plant, and only a few drops of juice come out.
Yeah.
Any fruit, any green, if you juice greens, way, way more water in the commercial stuff. And they're cosmetically very pretty too, but that's at the expense of the nutrients. So I put as many wild foods in my diet as possible.
Yeah, and like those wild grapes, like the juice from those wild grapes is so dark. You
It's
can't even get
nothing like you can what
dark.
you can buy.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm preaching to the choir with you guys.
Well, we're definitely on the team wild plants.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I remember first when I first started eating wild foods, I was just so surprised by how little I would need to eat compared to grocery store bought food. You know, like we would just need this like small serving on a plate and it would fill me up versus, you know,
Yeah.
maybe the whole plate would be full of vegetables that you would get at the grocery store. So it really is amazing how like nutrient dense they are.
Absolutely. Here, let me see if I can share the screen and show you a scene. This is a pencil drawing my daughter Violet recently did, me and her foraging when she was a kid. She's now 19. She's going to be 20 next month. But this really
Great.
captures the feel. And of course, with Violet, there's a bird flying up in the air.
Of course.
Let's see this
You
if
both have
works.
plants that you're explaining or inspecting. That's
Yeah, I wonder what that plant is. That
almost looks like
yeah,
a raspberry. Maybe it's part of the tree.
I think it's more of a metaphoric plant. Doesn't look like
Yeah.
a species. So let me see if I can find this here. Yeah, I'm an artist too. These
Oh
are
my
my
goodness.
paintings of the dandelion.
That
So
is so
the
gorgeous.
dandelion comes from the old French dandelion because it has these teeth on the edge. And unlike shepherd's purse, which looks similar but doesn't have the white sap, or wild lettuce, which is related, the teeth point toward the base of the plant. And then, of course, it has the taproot that's used as a toxifying herbal tea, and the flower, the seed head. And if you make a wish and blow the seeds away, your wish will come true as long as you wish for more dandelions.
Yes.
And the flower, the green sepals underneath are bitter, but my daughter discovered that if you bite right into the center of the flower, you get a burst of nectar.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, and I guess the last thing I did is I removed the sepals and I melted some baker's chocolate, no sugar, with some stevia as a sweetener and a few wild spices, and dipped the flowers in there and then let them cool and had chocolate covered dandelions.
Wow,
And of
that
course, there
sounds
are
so
a lot of
good.
other dandelion recipes.
Yum.
I think you mentioned garlic mustard before.
Yeah.
Yeah, garlic mustard's popping up right now. A little too much for our
Yeah,
liking in our
very
forest.
invasive.
Yeah.
That's one of those plants you can never really over-harvest.
Yeah.
No. Let me see if I can find my.
They can also be a little bitter sometimes, and
Yes, but
I wonder
what I.
what. Yeah, what is your favorite way to eat them?
Okay. Are you familiar with a buttercup by the name of Lesser Celandine? Quite
Yeah.
invasive. It is acrid when you it's acrid, and there's my painting of first year
So
garlic
good.
with my calligraphy. So it's acrid if you bite into it, but if you boil it in very lightly salted water for 2 minutes, it becomes bland. And for years, I figured, oh, this is if you're lost in the wilderness and you have nothing else to eat, you could eat that. But then it turned out it's incredible for debittering other plants. So you cook that
Wow.
after it's been pre-boiled with the young garlic mustard, and the bitterness is gone.
Wow, that's wild.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
do you
And I'm planning when I finally finish with my video course and can really delve into cooking more. I'm planning on trying to see if a combination of lesser celandine, I'll show pictures of that too, with bitter dock remove the bitterness, and even try dandelion in the summer when it's extremely bitter. Maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. So
Okay,
it's just a
interesting.
basil rosette, first year garlic mustard, the leaves come out in a circle from the root. Have you eaten the root?
Yeah, it's like a wasabi.
I avoid it because I'm a vegan. It tastes like horseradish to me.
Yeah.
Quite delicious.
Yeah.
Let me see what.
I love the crown sometimes can be a very vibrant purple. You ever get that with the garlic
Yes,
mustard?
yes, yes. Let's see if I have some other art. I have too many pictures of garlic
Yeah,
mustard.
there's a lot.
Oh,
Oh,
here it
there's
is. This
the
is
seed.
first year garlic mustard leaf. That's the first drawing I ever did. I had
No
awful
way.
teachers in school. They told me I had no talent at all in art.
Well, they lied.
They didn't teach anything. They just gave you
Yeah.
crayons and paper and read the newspaper. And of course, they never put a single one of my colorings, crayon drawings up on the wall. So when I first, again, when I first started foraging, I got the opportunity to write an article for a health and nutrition newsletter, and I didn't have a still camera and I needed a picture. So I took the basil leaf of the garlic mustard, that one leaf you see there by itself, that's first what you see in the first year, and put it between two panes of glass. Put tracing paper on top and shone a light underneath so I could trace it. But however
Nice.
I moved the plant or the light or the glass, it was always blurry. It got so frustrating. I just put the leaf down on my desk, took a pen and drew it. And that's how I started with art. Then I got art books from the library, and step by step over a long period of time, learn how to do pen and ink, which you see here, pencil and watercolor pencil, and a wash that's like brush with ink and acrylic paints. I make sculptures modeled after wild mushrooms and paint them with acrylic paints.
Ooh.
So the first year, garlic mustard, the leaves come out in a circle from the root called a basil rosette. The second year, it develops the stem. And the leaves are more pointy than the basil leaves. They're toothed, they're serrated, little white flowers with four petals shaped like a cross on top, similar to other mustards. Plants that are related, of course, have similar flowers, not necessarily similar leaves. And the needle-shaped seed pods. Have you eaten the seeds from garlic mustard in the summer?
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
they're
I have
delicious.
not yet made a mustard out of it, but I like to just crack them open and put a few in my mouth and eat them that way.
I can't make guacamole without putting some of the garlic mustard seeds on it.
Yum.
I love those. Yeah. And yeah, you recognize the flowers on top. This is in mid to late spring. And the needle-shaped pods, there's so many needle-shaped pods on this plant that botanists have conjectured that it must have evolved in the South Bronx. Have you had the sprouts of the garlic mustard?
From the
Those
senior seeds.
you should look for now. Let me show you the picture of them. Hold on. Here they are.
Oh, the babies. Yeah, the
This
little
is on the
babies.
ground now. They smell like garlic and they taste like a combination of garlic and bean sprouts.
Nice.
And they
That sounds
are
good.
really good. You toss some in a salad, any recipe where you use sprouts, use them as a garnish on soups. They are absolutely wonderful.
So,
So
do you
this
like to snip them with a knife or scissors, or do you pull them up by the root?
I tend to just tear. I find where they're the thickest and just tear off bunches with my hand.
Sweet.
Let me
That's a
see.
good way to keep the garlic mustard in check, too, just to be eating it at
Yes.
all stages.
For people who don't know it, here's a photo of the first year plant.
And are you
Seeds.
making pesto in one of those pictures?
Yes. I was
Nice.
looking for my photo of my recipe. Oh, here's what the seed pods look like. So this you get
Nice.
in the summer, and you just zip off the seed pods, and rub them over it. I put them into a tote bag clipped to my belt, and then when I get home, I rub them over a tray, and all the seeds fall out, and I blow the chaff away into the sink. You have to be very careful when you collect this not to let the seeds fall on the ground. Especially if you're Catholic, you're not supposed to spill your seeds.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes Isaac will go out with like a brown paper bag and
Yes.
put the bag over the seeds and then like shake them off into the bag so you're getting every last one right into your bag instead of on the ground.
Yeah, and here they are after you've picked them.
And so you just put those raw, or do you like roast them or something when
I
you put them
put
on your
them
guac?
into a jar. They burn if you roast them. I bake them into breads like caraway seeds, and
Nice. That looks good.
they're fine in soups and things that are baked in the oven. But if you sauté them in oil, the temperature gets too high and they burn. But unlike commercial mustard seeds, you don't have to grind them. They are chewy, but
Okay.
quite delicious. I still use this one. Oh, this is cream garlic mustard. Since the garlic mustard is very strong, I cook it with pasta, which is sort of bland or mild, and a vegan cream sauce, and that offsets the intensity and the bitterness. And this is
Beautiful.
a picture. Here are the flowers. All mustards have four petals shaped like a cross, indicating there must be a family of Christian plants. And the bud in the center looks like broccoli, which is related. And this bud's for you. I'm looking for my pesto, which I have somewhere in here. Oh, here it is with a corn chip. So you
Nice.
put garlic mustard in a food processor with olive oil, basil. Do you have gout weed where you are?
Yeah, we have quite a bit of it actually.
Yeah, it's invasive too. It tastes like parsley, celery, and carrots, and it's much better than parsley in a
Yeah.
pesto. As a vegan, I put in nutritional yeast instead of cheese, coarse salt, which is crunchier than fine salt. The restaurant chefs love fine salt, and for things that need crunch, coarse salt is better. If it's going to dissolve, it doesn't make any difference. And then at the you puree that, and then you can put in black walnuts, commercial walnuts, or pine nuts at the end, and you get a really good pesto. And if you're doing this
Nice.
yourself, don't put everything in the food processor at once. Put some of each and then taste it and decide, do you need more nutritional yeast? Do you need more garlic? Oh, and I put in commercial garlic too. You could put in garlic as well. And then you keep some of the ingredients set aside, and taste it, and then add more of whichever ingredient you think you would like more of, and record the amount. So then the next time you know exactly how many cups or tablespoons of each ingredient to put in, and then you have the perfect pesto for your taste, and it freezes quite well too. And now I
How
wish
nice is that?
I have some in the freezer. I wish I defrosted it because I'm going to have lunch after this podcast, and I'd love to have a
Nice.
pesto.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
Are there
that's
any other like ways of preserving food other than, making a big batch of pesto and freezing it that you like to do on the regular?
Oh, I've had a food dehydrator since the 70s. That works really well. You
Okay,
dehydrate
yeah.
it and you put the stuff in a glass jar. And when you want it, you can either soak it in vegetable stock, or if it's a fruit, in fruit juice overnight. The tart fruits, I'll use pear juice. The non-tart ones, I'll use apple juice. Or you could just pour boiling stock over it and let it sit for 1 hour, and then it's ready to go. And of course, the stock has more flavor after it's been soaked than before.
That's a great tip.
Yeah,
Using trees and
dehydration
stock.
is excellent. People used to hang the herbs on the rafters and let them air dry. Air drying works too, but you don't hang them on the rafters for 2 weeks because then you have a 2 week accumulation of house dust, which contains arsenic. You put it in a paper bag. The paper is porous, and that prevents the house dust from accumulating on the plant. And after a couple of weeks, it's also dry. But if you're going to be doing this seriously, I bought a dehydrator in the 1970s, which I still use, and
Wow.
it's paid for itself many, many times over.
Definitely.
Yeah, this year on the list of projects, we're going to do a solar dehydrator as long as we have
Oh,
time.
interesting.
But we, yeah, the dehydrating is, well, we dehydrate a lot of herbs and mushrooms,
Yeah,
but we
so
haven't done.
why? Although some of them are dangerous. I mean,
Yeah.
I found a 27-pound hen of the woods last fall, filled up
Wow, 27.
my entire backpack. I was staggering out of the park with
That's
this thing.
wild.
And I cooked as much as I could and dehydrated a huge amount. And as I said, that is a very dangerous mushroom because I opened the closet where I have the dehydrated mushrooms, is so much, one of the jars tries to fall on my foot. Watch out with those. Yeah, it's March, and yesterday I had a tour in Forest Park in Queens, New York City. And we found some tree ear, wood ear mushrooms. Are you familiar with that one? It's a
Yeah,
gelatinous
yeah.
mushroom, grows
The
on
jelly,
sticks.
yeah, one
Yes,
of the jelly mushrooms.
brown one, and it's used in Chinese cuisine. A lot of Chinese recipes. A lot of Chinese recipes, they put them in soups. What I discovered is if you make a puree with some cooked chickpeas, white miso, pine nuts, a little bit of a neutral or oil like rapeseed oil, and put in sweet spices, and then bake the mushrooms in it, it comes out like gummy bears. I call the recipe gummy ears. And quite,
Yum.
yeah. And one of the spices I use that no one has ever used as a spice is sassafras. That's a tree.
Oh.
It's well known for tea and for root beer. But
Yeah.
what I do is I take the cambium, the layer around the roots, wash it off, and then scrape off the cambium and use it fresh or dried as a culinary seasoning. It has a flavor that is like a combination of root beer, cinnamon, and anise.
Some of
And
my favorite flavors.
yeah, so here's
Oh,
my pen
nice.
and ink drawing of the flowers with the undeveloped leaves. And this is what you look for now, the twigs. that point upward at the top. There's so many pointing upward that it looks like a Hanukkah menorah. So I think sassafras is a Jewish tree.
Okay.
And
I'll buy it, yeah.
and the young leaves, which I'm sure you know, are dried and powdered in Louisiana and used to thicken soup. You put it in when the soup is finished. The powder is called filet powder, and the soup is called gumbo. And what I discovered is that you don't the dried filet powder is excellent to have. I certainly have a jar of it, but they didn't have blenders in Louisiana in 1800, so you get the young sassafras leaves, you have a soup, you remove some of the stock, put it in the blender with the leaves, puree it, and pour that back into the soup. And that works as extremely well too as a thickener. So I love using sassafras. Here, is this picture coming up?
Yeah.
Okay, so it has three kinds of leaves. Some have three lobes, some are oval, and some look like mittens. So makes it very easy for beginners to recognize. And when you find one this small, and they can't survive in the shade under taller trees, so you can pull this native tree out, especially if you have someone helping you. And if it's rained, then the soil is softer. You can pull it out and use the root. And all of these young leaves here, not the big old ones, give you the thickening, the filet powder, and you can just pop them in your mouth. So I'm sure you know they're quite good tasting. But try using the dried cambium of the root as a seasoning. It is incredible. Any sweet dish. So the Native Americans would simmer the root, which you can use over and over again, and make a tea, which they considered a detoxifier. Then Europeans who came to America for the purpose of making money saw this new health drink and brought it back to Europe, and it made a lot of money. They sold it as health drink. They got more sassafras, added more things that sassafras would cure, no regulation back then, and made even more money. And then they made a fatal mistake. They brought it back to Europe and said it cures everything. Everything just happens to include syphilis and gonorrhea. And suddenly, anyone seen holding up a cup of sassafras tea would be suspected of having an STD. And the bottom dropped out of the sassafras market. The bubble burst, and they couldn't even give it away. Oh, and
Wow,
it
interesting.
usually has three lobes. Or my daughter Violet found one with five lobes. And she finds all kinds of stuff
Yeah.
that I never see. So
Like
quite an
a
amazing.
four-leaf clover, but a five-leafed
No,
sassafras.
there was a woman by the name of Ellie.
Mm-hmm.
She'd passed away a long time ago. She was a school teacher, and she'd come on my public tours, and she hired me to work with her school classes. And wherever there were clovers, she would spot one four-leaf clover after another after another. And when she got tired of that, she'd pick up and show me a five-leaf clover.
Whoa,
And about a couple of months ago, I spoke to one of her daughters, little kids, but now they were grown up and middle-aged. And the daughter inherited the ability. It's apparently genetic, and she can spot the three-leaf clovers that no one else can see equally easily. So quite amazing.
yeah, I'm not one of those folks. I've never found a four-leaf clover in my life.
I do
She's
have
the
a only person I know who could do that, and now her daughter claims the
Oh.
same superpower.
It is a
I
superpower.
know one person who has that superpower. So
Yep.
it's kind of interesting. They
Yep.
always manage to find a four-leaf clover, and
Yeah.
it's how, I don't know.
Yeah.
I just
see them. Totally
Yeah.
different visual wiring of their nervous system. So in the Prohibition era, there was a man who wanted to get rich, and he decided he'd invent a drink that made him very wealthy. And where do people go to drink? and bars. And what's the most common thing they drink in bars? Beer. So he used the sassafras root, which he fermented to make root beer. And the man's name is Hires. And he's still getting richer every day, even though he died of old age 80 years ago. But the quick and dirty way to make root beer with sassafras, you boil the root for 20 minutes. It makes a delicious tea. You save the root. You can use it over and over again. And then you chill the tea. You buy some sparkling water and you chill that too. Then, as with the other recipe, it has to be chilled because warm sparkling water goes flat. You add some of the tea and some of the sparkling water into a bowl, stir it and taste. And then you have the ability to add more tea or more sparkling water according to what you prefer. And of course, measure what you're using. And then you can duplicate the exact correct proportion every time you make this subsequently for your taste. And add sweetener. My preferred sweetener is liquid stevia, which is a plant. And you have incredible root beer. And the sassafras is around all year. You can't dig it up when the ground is frozen. Let me see if I can find a photo of the plant without the leaves. It's green. It's quite distinctive.
What I've found often with the sassafras is they'll grow as a colony, you know, they have the root
Yes,
sucker.
yes.
You can
Yeah,
chase those
correct.
root suckers back, and wow,
Nice. That's
that's
a
a
big
big one.
one.
Can be quite big. Yeah.
That's a
You
great picture.
can yank out the roots, still trying to see. Yeah. Here's one in the winter. And notice how the tips of the twigs are all pointing upward and it's green. And you break it and smell it. It has this lemony root beer smell. And then you know you have the right one. Yeah, and it does spread by the roots and it needs full sunlight to survive. So the adult tree makes lots of saplings. So one managed to grow somewhere in the sun and survive. And the rest, when they're small enough to pull out, you pull up and they are incredibly delicious. Yes, I love it.
Isaac makes a really nice root beer with sassafras and sarsaparilla and like a little reishi and cinnamon and
Spice bush,
dandelions and
spice
spice
bush.
bush. So
I
it's like a
love the
bitter.
spice bush, but you have to be very careful when you collect from the spice bush not to bump into one of the spice girls.
That
Actually happened to me once. No, I'm just kidding.
Who have I bumped into? When I was a chess player, someone introduced me to Bobby Fischer, who I consider the best chess, top chess player of all time. And I got to shake hands with him, and my rating went up 100 points.
Wow.
He was a genius. Let me see where I have the spice bush here.
Yeah, let's see the
I have.
spice.
Yeah, I've been really interested in doing more like native wild spices. You know, sassafras is one of those great ones. Spice
Right.
bush. Do you use spice bush a lot as
I
a
use it
spice?
all. I use it all the time.
Cool.
It's one of my favorite plants.
Do you use more the berries or like the root or the twig?
I use the berries.
Berries.
Here's my painting.
Lovely.
Wow.
That
So it
looks like
has
a picture.
alternate or single leaves. The edges are smooth, and unlike almost any other tree or shrub, and this is a shrub, the leaves are different sizes, shaped sort of like teardrops, and you just pull off the berries. And they don't dry well, so I freeze them. I put them on a tray, and then they freeze separately, and then I pack them into a freezer container. So there's my pencil drawing of the same thing with the alternate teardrop-shaped leaves of different sizes. This comes out really well, spice berry peanut butter. You put 3 cups of peanuts, you roast them yourself, then they're perfectly roasted to your taste. Stir every now and then, taste now and then. When they're perfect, out of the oven they come. That's all. I put 3 cups into a food processor with a quarter of a cup of peanut oil, a teaspoon of spice berries, 1/8 of a teaspoon each of ground cloves, and ground black pepper, and a teaspoon of coarse salt. And I puree that. And then I add a fourth cup of peanuts and process till just chopped to get a crunchy peanut butter. If you like smooth peanut butter, you put in all the peanuts at once. And incredibly, incredibly delicious. I mean, for a dessert, I just put some of this flavorful peanut butter on slices of apples, and that's plenty. And
Sounds so
incredibly,
good.
especially wild apples. I love wild apples. You
I
know,
would
I
love
apples
that.
have red cheeks.
Why?
Okay, once upon a time, there was a fall harvest festival like the ones we have today, only it was in ancient Rome. And there was a parade, and the goddess Pomona, who was the goddess of fruits and had her own apple orchard. Instead of living on Mount Olympus with the other gods, she lived on Earth and had her apple orchard with big fence around it and guards, because she was very beautiful and she was afraid men would come in and fight over her and damage her beloved apple trees. So she stayed in her orchard, except once in the fall, she came out for the fall harvest festival and participated in the parade. And there was a young man by the name of Vertumnus who saw her and instantly fell in love with her. So next day he picked a bouquet of beautiful wildflowers and went up to the orchard and told the guards, "Please let me in. I'd like to visit Pomona. I picked these flowers for her." Guard says, "No men allowed." Again, Pomona did not want men fighting over her and damaging her trees. What could he do? The next day he came back with a straw hat, a big sack slung over his shoulder, and a hooked pole with a crook on top, and told the guards, "I'm an apple harvester. I'm here to harvest the apples." "No men allowed." He tried disguise after disguise. Nothing worked. Finally, he dumped white flour on his, finally a good use for white flour. He dumped white flour on his head. He wore an old torn up cloak, had a crooked staff and hunched over and hobbled over to the guards disguised as an old lady and walked right past the guards. And then he saw Pomona. And he said, "You know, Pomona, dear, you should have a boyfriend or a husband. You are very beautiful. Venus, the god of love, once turned a woman who was so cold-hearted she rejected all of her suitors into a stone. And I love you." And he embraced her. "Oh, lady, get your hands off me. I don't go in that direction." Then he removed his disguise and said, "My name is Pomona. I love you, and if you marry me, I'll take good care of your apples." And that did, I should try that next time. That did it. They fell in love, and ever since then, the cheeks of the apples turned as rosy red as the rosy red cheeks of the healthy young lovers. So that's how the
Nice.
apples got the color on their cheeks.
Nice.
That's a cool story.
Yeah,
Haven't
this
heard that one
style of
before.
story. Yeah, I mean, I feel when I teach foraging, the more stories and anecdotes I put
Oh,
in, the better. Yeah,
totally.
mysterious. If you
Yes.
just hit yourself over the head with one fact after the other, after the other, after the other, it becomes impossible to remember anything. That's called school.
I know,
Yeah.
yeah,
And
absolutely.
of course, the non-technological cultures would enter that didn't have writing to record stuff, would embed all of the information with stories. And in the slow
Right.
season, like here in the winter, the Native Americans would be in their longhouses, and the apprentices to the shaman who had all the knowledge would have to learn the stories word for word, so that in that, which includes the uses of the plants. So in 100 years, the story wouldn't be so changed that an edible plant would suddenly be poisonous. Do you know the story of the persimmon?
No, but that's one of my favorites, the persimmon, American persimmon.
I love the American persimmon. Let
So
me
yummy.
show you
We
my.
named our little puppy after persimmon, so.
Percy.
Yeah, you want them, when they look sort of rotten and they don't have the astringency anymore.
Yes.
You see
Yeah.
where they
Do you have a
are.
lot of persimmons down there where you are?
Some. There are some that were planted in Central Park and some in Prospect Park. Maybe I have them under American persimmon. Here they are.
Yeah, we don't have any up here, but I'm working on that.
I planted some.
Okay, here's my painting.
Nice.
Nice. They're around here. They're the last fruit to come in season, late November, December, just when I'm ending my tours. My last tour every year for the last 42 years was Central Park. And the last plant we pick is the persimmon. And we leave the park with the persimmons. Since the time has changed by then, the sun is setting on my last minute of my last tour of the year. So the leaves are alternate. It's a tree. It has a blocky bark like mosaic. It's in the ebony family. Here's my drawing of the twig with a stalkless fruit and four sepals, modified leaves. The leaves are oval, smooth edged. Let's see what else. This is a color pencil painting of a persimmon in Casina Park in Flushing, Queens, in the winter. So very, very dark bark. It's in the ebony family. And a lot of this material, by the way, is in my app Foraging with a Wild Man, which people can download. See if I can show some other stuff. This seems to be stuck here. No, there it goes. I have a Simonola recipe that would take 7 minutes to show. It's a video going to be on my course of granola with persimmon. So here is the bark. These rectangles make it very distinct, like a mosaic. And what do I have here? Persimmon cookies. Quite
With the
delicious.
fruit?
Yeah.
Ooh, yum.
Yeah, if this video is not in my upcoming video course, I'll eventually have another all recipe video course. And there, of course, is the persimmon.
I want one right now.
Yeah, and I didn't get any dried ones last year. Too busy working on my course to do all the cooking I usually do. So once upon a time, this is a Native American story. There was a turtle and an opossum, and they were friends, and they were walking through the woods together on a journey. And they came to a persimmon tree. So the opossum climbed up and started eating the persimmon. And the turtle that couldn't climb trees on the ground said, "Hey, buddy, I'd like some too." And the opossum said, "Sure," and started throwing some down to the turtle. And they were having a real feast when suddenly a wolf jumped out from behind the bushes and he was hungry and he attacked the turtle. The turtle went into his shell and the wolf could not get at the turtle. But the wolf was very determined. He stayed there, figuring at some point the turtle is going to have to come out of his shell and then wham, dinner. And this went on for a long time and the turtle was getting hungry. So the opossum came up with a plan. He threw a persimmon right in front of the shell where the turtle's head was, and the turtle stuck out his head, grabbed the persimmon, and went back into his shell to enjoy it. Now, this did not make the wolf very happy. So every time a persimmon came down, even though the wolf was a predator, he would eat the persimmon first. So now things were looking very desperate for the turtle again. So the opossum came up with a plan. He started throwing down persimmons faster and faster. The wolf kept wolfing them down faster and faster. And then the one giant mutated persimmon, similar to the ones you buy in the store, which are much bigger than the American persimmons, he threw that down. The wolf wolfed it down. It stuck in his throat and he choked. And that's how the turtle's life was saved. But when the possum came down, the turtle was very shaken by his near-death experience. The opossum said, I'm going to give you a present. And he chewed off the ears of the wolf and presented them to the turtle as wolf ear spoons, so he'd have a souvenir of his success. So they continued traveling. They came to a village. The people were very nice, and they offered the turtle and an opossum some soup. And the turtle took out his wolf ear spoons to eat the soup, and the people in the village saw this. There's something wrong here. Turtles do not slay wolves. This must be some kind of demon in disguise, and it's going to be after us next. So very slowly, the people backed out of the village and went far, far away. And suddenly, for no reason at all, the turtle and the opossum were alone. Couldn't understand why. They kept traveling, and several other times, different villages, the exact same thing happened. They never figured it out. Anyway, eventually, the turtle and the opossum parted company and went their own way. But meanwhile, the wolves heard this terrible story of this vicious turtle that slays wolves. And instead of people being afraid of them, the wolves were a laughing stock. And this cannot continue. We can't allow a turtle that slays wolves to ruin our reputation. We're fierce predators. So they tracked down the turtle and they caught him. And the turtle retreated into his shell. So the wolves had a council. What should we do with the turtle? Let's hang him up in a tree and just wait for him to starve to death. And the turtle from in his shell said, Yes, do that. I have stored fat. I can live for months on stored fat, and eventually I'll get away. The wolves had another council, and everything they came up with, the turtles had a and I forgot to say it, but the turtle said, but don't throw me into that raging river. So every idea the wolves came up with, we'll roast him over a fire. And the
Ooh.
turtle said, yes, do that. The fire will burn my ropes. The shell will protect me and I'll get away. But don't throw me in that raging river. And other council, let's throw him in the raging river. Yes. So they threw him in the river. His shell skittered over the rocks and got marked up, and that's why the turtle has all the marks on his shell. And then the turtle just swam away and said, I was born and bred in the river. And that's
Nice.
how the turtle got the cracks on his shell. So a lot of these really interesting, fun stories. These are the people who'd be writing plays or movies or books today. They came up with these incredibly good stories, and often they had other talents, so they would build instruments and set the story to music and come up with poetry, and it would be poetic, whether this is in ancient Greece or Native American or other folk cultures, and then you remember the information better.
Oh, yeah. I imagine maybe it was like a green persimmon that too, that like the get stuck in your throat, you know, and get all stringent. But yeah, this time sure has flown. So we really appreciate you being on the show, Wild Man.
Sure, it's a pleasure. So people can look up wildmansteveBrill.com. I've got five books, one for the whole country, one for the New York area, one with my own illustrations on early spring plants, the stuff that's around now that's the hardest to identify. We're taping this in early spring. And one with the easiest plants and lots of stories and folklore and mythology for parents and teachers to use with kids called Foraging with Kids. The app is called Foraging with a Wild Man. If you're in my area and you come on about 10 tours, different parks, different times of the year, you'll know most of the plants and the different stages. And eventually, the video course will come out, Foraging with the Wild Man and Violet. but that is still some months off. So thank you so much. This has been a pleasure, and I've been enjoying your podcast. Keep up the good work. And
Thanks. Thank you so
hopefully,
much.
in mushroom season, we can do something about, on the mushrooms.
Oh my
That'd be
gosh.
awesome.
Yeah, I wanted
Yes.
to ask you about mushrooms, but time did not allow. So let's totally have you on again and talk about mushrooms.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. And it'll send me a link when this appears.
Yes, we
Yeah.
will. And
Okay.
you can share it out with your friends and
Okay. Happy foraging.
thanks,
You
you
too.
too.